Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to the Last Round Podcast, a bonus edition here with our guest of the week. If you're looking for our typical show of reviews, previews, and analysis and news in the sport of boxing, you might want to check out our other updated episode, which should be alongside this one. But this one, our guest of the week, he's the COO, Chief Operating Officer of Major League Wrestling, which is broadcasted currently on Reels. And his great-grandfather, Louis St. Laurent, I hope I pronounced that right, and I was having some trouble, was the 12th Prime Minister of the country of Canada from 1948 to 1957. And his personal website, which is, this is very interesting to me, was the first one-character.sl domain name, I believe, in history, which we'll let him expand on in a second. Mr. St. Laurent joins us here on the Last Round Podcast. Thank you for joining us, man.
Wow, that was a hell of an introduction. I'm so excited to be here. Appreciate it, guys. Lots to talk about, obviously, in the crazy Wild West sport of professional boxing.
So, as I mentioned, you're currently involved in professional wrestling. And I mean, you have, based on our research, and obviously people who are listening to this, some people are familiar with who you are. But for our boxing listeners, our listeners who might not be familiar of who exactly Mr. St. Laurent is, can you give us a background of how you got started and how you got to where you are currently in MLW?
Sure. So I've worked in boxing, wrestling, and MMA my whole life. I'm one of those guys that thinks they're all the same business. People want to see other people hit each other, and one person has that ultimate triumph and the other has that ultimate humiliation. And I don't think the public cares as much about what the rules of the fight are. They just want to see somebody achieve that incredible victory and somebody else also have that incredible humiliation. So I've worked in all three sports off and on, you know, throughout my life. I actually got my start down in South Florida. I happen to live near the Don King offices and was an intern for a bit as a teenager. And that's how I first got my foot in the door in the fight game. And actually have worked a little bit helping behind the scenes on his recent pay-per-views, which if people have seen commercials for those pay-per-views on MLW's TV show, that's part of how that came about. Was just a huge boxing and wrestling fan growing up in the 80s and 90s, and just wanted to work in combat sports, and worked as a reporter. I was a pro wrestler for a long time, and now working as a promoter as well.
Working with Don King is a whole bonus episode of stories all on its own, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I know for especially for younger boxing fans that were not around for the glory days of Don King, you say what you want about whether you would have wanted to be a fighter under contract to him, but in terms of what it was like to be a fan back in the day, where you'd have four or five world championship fights on one card. He set a record once doing 8 world title fights on the same card. So, you know, that was the era I grew up on. And I certainly have fond memories of a lot of those big Don King shows. But, you know, in more modern times, both as a fan, specifically of the heavyweight division, you know, this whole soap operas that's been going on for 5 years with Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, and Tyson Fury, this kind of triangle of madness of all these warring political factions. It's been fascinating to pay attention to, in my opinion, and I'm sure you guys have covered it, you know, through the years. And, you know, in recent times, everyone knows Deontay Wilder has been over in the Middle East talking business, and, you know, I have some connections in that area, and you know, one of the television channels that we used to be broadcast on is owned by a country in the Middle East. And I spoke to a couple different sources from 2 different countries in the Middle East that had both been pitched on Anthony Joshua versus Deontay Wilder towards the end of the year, I don't think it's going to be Wilder's next fight. And look, it's boxing. This thing could fall through. It's not signed. But I'm told it's very serious. It's very real. And it is like the primary focus of each fighter for their last fight of the year.
Now, Mr. And I'm saying Mr. I'm not saying Mr. I know that's your first name, so I'm trying to get used to referring to you like that.
Or just call me M. That'll make it easier for
okay,
you.
Okay, so now M.
Yeah.
So for people listening, because when you tweeted this out, I'm going to read your tweet just so people who probably don't remember the exact verbatim. It says, exclusive, Eddie Hearn and Shelley Finkel, and you tag them, close to deal for Anthony Joshua versus Bronze Bomber Deontay Wilder in the Middle East in the second half of 2023. And then you tagged a couple different boxing personalities and reporters. So because a lot of boxing fans have never, maybe not aware of you, as I mentioned, but
right.
You know, you've never tweeted out something in regards to news like this. You know, this is usually reserved for, you know, some of the people that you tagged. You know, they put out big news like this or sources and you know,
some of the people I tagged are people that I've given scoops to in the past. And
this is
the first time that I've under my name just said, screw it. I'll leak it myself. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a very, very big statement to say.
I'm
so
not saying all of them, but some of those. Yeah. Yeah. I'm friends with a couple of those guys. Yeah.
Okay. So you're saying, and we're not saying you to name them, but
yeah,
you're saying that you've been some type of source for boxing news to some reporters and personalities within boxing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been involved behind the scenes in the sport for decades at this point. Wrestling is my primary occupation, but like I said, to me, it's all the same business and, you know, a lot of people's paths end up crossing.
Okay. So that's very, very interesting. That's very interesting. And like you just said, it got to this point for this specific tweet where you just thought, you know what, I'm going to tweet it out and put this news out myself. What made you have that mentality and make that decision?
You know, I had talked to a couple people behind the scenes of like what I had learned, and some of them had heard similar things and just weren't comfortable running it yet or owed people favors and had been told not to run it. So I said, well, I don't owe anybody shit, so I'll run it.
But you felt comfortable just throwing it out there then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely true. I felt completely comfortable. I mean, I knew there would be this skeptical reaction from people in the boxing world of like, who the hell is this guy? Which I was fine with. I didn't know it was going to catch on the way it did. And, you know, listen, I have a little bit of a following on my account, 6,000 or 7,000 people. I didn't expect 100,000 people to see the tweet, which is what ended up happening. But, yeah, I just figured, hey, it's true. I know some of my fans are boxing fans, and I'll just tweet it out and go to bed, and that'll be the end of it. And I wake up the next day, and it had exploded.
So for our listeners and our, you know, the hardcore boxing fan, like you mentioned at the beginning, you're not just a wrestling personality involved in professional wrestling. You have been a boxing fan for several years, and you are would you consider yourself a hardcore boxing fan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, wrestling and boxing, I fell in love with both at the same exact time. I was 5 years old, 1988, and Hulk Hogan and Mike Tyson were the two biggest stars in the world. And as a kid, I just thought it's all the same thing. The rules are just different. You know, obviously, as a kid, you think wrestling's real. And as a kid, you think boxing's real. And you get older and you find out it's not completely real either. And that's a whole nother discussion. But yeah, I've been a big boxing fanatic since the late 80s.
So going back to this specific tweet, because it's obviously the heavyweight division, when there's a saying, and I'm sure you've heard it, when the heavyweight division is pretty much going great, boxing is going great. And obviously the heavyweight division for the last 5, 6, 7 years has been pretty healthy. So the news between two of the biggest personalities and fighters in the sport, especially in the heavyweight division, between AJ, Anthony Joshua, and Deontay Wilder, former heavyweight world champions. How credible, and you've already kind of laid out your credibility and your background and that you have connections, you've been around, but how confident, if you had to put a percentage, that this is actually going to develop and happen in the Middle East in the second half of 2023? How confident are you percentage-wise?
I'll put it at maybe 50 or 60%. Because look, if you look at what could happen between now and then, we're sitting here. It's essentially the beginning of March, probably by the time this comes out. And, look, if they're planning on fighting in November or December, a lot of stuff could happen in between. AJ could lose April 1st, although I don't think he will. Wilder is looking to fight June 3rd. Could that be Ngannou from UFC? Could that be Andy Ruiz? Could that be somebody else? Who knows? You know, part of this too is, does Eddie Hearn try to squeeze Joshua White 2 in July and then fight Wilder in December? So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts on this thing. And guys could lose in between, you know, but the money that's on offer for this fight, they can't get that money anywhere else. They're both frozen out of the title picture temporarily, unless Fury and Usyk falls through, in which case, if Fury and Usyk falls through, I think everything else is out of the window and it's just Usyk and Wilder next. So forget about everything else. I think Wilder just goes straight to Usyk if Fury and Usyk falls through. But assuming Fury and Usyk happens, Joshua and Wilder have no shot at any titles this year. Then there's nothing bigger they can do than to take the Middle East money at the end of the year.
Who's the best heavyweight in the world today to you?
Oh, it's Tyson Fury, because this guy's just a freak of nature at that size. You know, we see it, especially in the NBA, the taller you are, normally the clumsier you are, you're less coordinated. And then you have a freak of nature like a Kevin Durant that's 6'11" or 7 feet tall, and he's got the coordination of a point guard. So Tyson Fury, you know, we've seen the Volueves and these other monsters in the past, right? That really couldn't string a combination together, and they had two left feet and you thought they'd fall over or into the ropes at any moment. I just think the combination of skill and size that Fury has, we've never had before in boxing. I'm not even a Fury fan, but just total respect to what he brings to the table. I don't see anybody that beats Fury on his best day, but his best days could be behind him soon. You know, he's been around a while at this point and had a lot of hard partying years, which start to add up later in your career. And so I'm not saying Usyk has no chance, but I definitely think Fury deserves to be considered the best.
So who would win in this? Obviously it's not official yet, but according to your tweet and what you've been talking about, it's close to a deal for the second half of this year. AJ versus Wilder, who takes that?
You know, it's the kind of fight where if they fought three times, and maybe they will, you know, it's one of those deals where I think AJ takes a decision in at least one of them. I think Wilder knocks him out in at least one of them, and the third one, who knows? But you know, I don't think Joshua can go 36 rounds with Wilder and not get knocked out in one of them. But I also don't think Wilder can knock him out three times in a row, and I don't see Wilder winning a decision. So, you know, look, if these guys fight, I think we're going to get multiple fights from them.
Who's the best pound for pound fighter in the world today?
Microman, who I promote in Major League Wrestling, because he's 62.
I served that up for you on purpose.
Yeah. Because he's 62 pounds, he's 3 feet tall, he's an incredible athlete, and if we're talking pound for pound, Microman's the best. I issued a challenge to Tank Davis to meet at a catch weight at 97¾ pounds, but thus far I've been ignored. But, you know, if we're talking boxing, I'm big on the belts, and I think if you want to say you're pound for pound the best, if you're undisputed, that adds a lot to your claim, in my opinion. So I still think a Canelo needs to be very high on the list. I put Jermell Charlo high at the list. If you're undisputed in your division, that's how I do my pound for pound rankings. Clear out your division, get all the belts, and then I think you have an argument to be pound for pound.
So Devin Haney at 135.
Those would be my top three. Yeah, my pound for pound rankings. If anyone's undisputed, you're going to at the top of the list if you got all the belts. And look, I know there's a lot of fans that can we swear on this show? What are we rated here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of fans say fuck the belts, right? A lot of executives say it. Everyone says fuck the belts, but at the end of the day, the sport revolves around the belts. Almost every fight you ever see is because a guy's got a belt, a guy's trying to get a belt, or the promoter is trying to figure out who can stop someone else from getting a belt. So everything revolves around the belts, whether we like them or not. And so, you know, look, if you got all of them, I'm going to be impressed.
Do you see that when you promote wrestling, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you see that? Like, do you see an increase of how many people watch or how many people buy tickets when there is a belt on the line?
Yeah. And look, the belts are everything in fighting, just in general. It's just ingrained in the culture. And the networks know it, which is why they spend so much more for belts on the line. And if the promoters know you're not good enough to win and keep a belt, they're just not going to pour the money into you. And I can remember, you know, I was a big boxing magazine reader growing up. I loved Boxing Monthly. I read boxing news from the UK every week. I get it every Wednesday on my magazine app. And you would read interviews with the TV executives back in the day, Lou DiBella in particular, who would say all the time, look, the fighter is not what the promoter considers the asset. The asset is the belts. They don't even care who the fighters are, as long as they don't lose control of the belts.
That's true. And then I know we're kind of at a 5-minute mark, so we obviously appreciate your valuable time today here on the last round. But you mentioned earlier that you've been a source for wrestling, I guess, journalists, reporters, personalities. How long have you been a source for them? How long would you consider yourself a legitimate source in the sport of boxing?
So I actually for many years owned a newspaper and made myself sports reporter of the newspaper. So I was covering all the fights in Florida, whether that was when UFC would come to town or any boxing fights. Went to a lot of Don King cards in Florida. I've been a bunch of Top Rank cards. I covered boxing for the Miami Herald at one point. So that's kind of how I became friends with a lot of reporters, because, you know, you see them at press conferences and weigh-ins and luncheons and all that kind of stuff. And so I would say, like, on the, you know, being friendly with a lot of boxing journalists, it's been, I don't know, 20, 21 years at this point, something like that.
And we need you back on just to do a show. So you've been a wrestler, you've promoted some boxing, worked for Don King, you've owned a newspaper, a little bit of everything. We need sure. you just to do a show about your life.
Oh, well, I don't know if I need to do a show about my life, but I'm happy to come on and talk boxing at any time. Certainly anything having to do with the belts, as one of my first jobs in boxing was studying the rules of every organization, trying to find loopholes and that kind of stuff. And so there's you're going to have a hard time finding a guest that has had to read through the rules of the sanctioning bodies more than I have in my life. And I can't even tell you, even like highly respected journalists, and I won't name names, how many times I will see in their stories where they'll refer to a rule from one of the organizations and it's just totally wrong. Whether that's the split in a purse bid of what the champion and the challenger get, whether it's the way the rankings work, whether it's the way mandatories work. I would be fine with them just saying they don't know, but I can't believe how often they'll like definitively state what the rule is and they have no idea what they're talking about.
Who, in your opinion, M, is overall, because they all have, each sanctioning body has right. their issues, obviously.
Yeah.
But who, in your opinion, since you said you've studied the rules and you're yeah. a little bit more familiar than the average boxing fan, who overall would you say is probably the best one?
Well, I mean, in all full disclosure, I am friendly with Mauricio from the WBC, but I've been a lifelong supporter of the WBC for the reasons I'm about to give. And if I go over on time here, it's fine because I love talking belts. So I can stick around for a little bit here. You have to think about where the belts came from. So to a fan that started watching yesterday, there's four recognized belts, but why are there four recognized belts? Because there used to be two for a long time. And so the WBC, if you trace it back, you know, way before you had the WBC and the WBA, you had the New York State Athletic Commission belt, which was the most respected. If you go back to like 1910, you had the IBU, which was a very respected belt. And going even into the 1800s, you had the National Sporting Club out of England. Well, the National Sporting Club over the years changed names a million times, and it essentially is now the BBBOC, the British Board, is what that morphed into over the years. And the IBU eventually said, we're not going to recognize world titles anymore. We're going to become the EBU and just focus on Europe. Well, the EBU and the BBBOC, along with the New York State Athletic Commission, they co-founded the WBC. So the WBC is a merger of those three original most respected titles from over 100 years ago. The WBA, which came out of the NBA, was a few smaller states in the United States that wanted to make a competitor to the New York title. That then splintered into the IBF and splintered into the WBO. So, like, even the lesser title, you have to unify the WBA, the IBF, and the WBO just to piece the old WBA back together, whereas the WBC has never splintered. It unified and has stayed unified all those years. It's the only organization that hasn't had a bribery scandal. The WBA has had many. They're in the midst of one right now. Greg Cohen, under oath in a deposition, admitted you have to pay a consulting company owned by Mendoza's son in order to move your fighters up the ranking. They have another scandal right now. The WBO, which was founded by Pepe Cordero, he was the leader of the WBA's bribery operation. And he was kicked out of the WBA when Bob Arum admitted that's who you pay all the bribes to. And he opened the WBO specifically to take bribes. The IBF, whose president, went to federal prison for taking bribes. And his nephew was considered an unindicted co-conspirator. His nephew is Daryl Peoples, the current president of the IBF. So, you know, the WBC, who has many faults, and we can do a belt show at some point, and I'm not saying they're perfect, but in a world of crooks, they are the smallest crook, probably because the Suleiman family has been very, very wealthy for generations and would be insulted if you offered them $250 to move a guy up to the number 14 ranking at 108 pounds. Whereas in the other organizations, they're nickeling and diming every penny they could get. That's just never how the WBC's operated.
So, Em, can we and the boxing fans expect more, I guess, exclusives or news drops like this from your account?
I mean, I don't plan on tweeting any boxing news anytime soon. I'll tell you what, the next time I have a scoop, I'll come right here and talk to you guys instead.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Well, we definitely appreciate your valuable time. You know, obviously you want to plug MLW. I know we mentioned at the beginning of the show that it's on Reels every week. Go ahead and plug and give us all the details.
Absolutely. Every Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, MLW on Reels, MLW Underground Wrestling. We actually try to cater specifically to fight fans. If you've ever been curious about wrestling, or you were a fan as a kid and you kind of got out of it because you thought it got a little too silly, we like to give you great athletes from all over the world, hard-hitting action. If you just hate pro wrestling, I'm not going to say check it out, but if you've ever been curious about it or liked it at any point in your life, Tuesdays at 10 on Reels, I guarantee you'll have a great time.
Who's the top star right now in MLW?
Alex Hammerstone, built like a Greek god. You know, a throwback to the Hulk Hogan days. That's our world heavyweight champion. But unlike Hulk Hogan, he's actually an incredible athletic wrestler. So that's our flagship franchise kind of guy, Alex Hammerstone.
And where can people follow you if they want to know more about you?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, @MSL. And I'm not a big plug guy, so thank you for the plugs. That's all the plugs I have. But I'll plug you guys because I do listen to your show. And so I am excited to be on here. I think one of the best boxing podcasts out there. And I hope to be back on again soon.
Definitely, definitely. We'll definitely have you back on. And I think with you listing the knowledge that you've had and how many years you've been involved, I would think that our listeners should be convinced that you're actually a hardcore fan, because I think that's what some people were kind of concerned about. Like, oh, who's this wrestling guy? But I think if they listen to this interview, or they're obviously listening right now, I think especially when you dived into the sanctioning bodies and the history behind it, there's not a lot of people who know about that. So I think you made a pretty good case for you to be a hardcore fan. We definitely appreciate it.
Well, it's hard to hide what a boxing nerd I am. I get complaints in the wrestling world all the time that I never shut up about boxing. So it's actually great to be here and just talking boxing.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it. Mike, go ahead and let them know as we sign off for this bonus edition where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to catch us for episode 210.
Correct. Yeah, our previews. And we got Mark Maxayo, Brandon Figueroa on Showtime this upcoming Saturday, which we'll be touching on. So once again, our big thanks to our guest of the week and Mr. Saint Laurent of Major League Wrestling, MLW, which is broadcasted on Reels every week. and his big news between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. We'll catch you guys on the next one. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.